Divided Kingdom. This is Luke Caverly, your host, and we have a lot of news today. Of course, the big news that's changing minute by minute is the situation in Iran. I'm not going to try to go into that too much because just about anything I say will be obsolete perhaps in the next hour or two, let alone by the time the broadcast is done. So I'm going to talk about a few other things, and I'm going to begin with something in my native state of Massachusetts, city of Boston. I grew up about 25 miles north of Boston, up near the historic towns of Gloucester, Ipswich, Salem. This one is from the Gateway Pundit. The headline reads, City of Boston sends a social worker to respond to an emergency call. He ends up getting attacked with a sword. This was by Mike LaChance, April 6th. Ever since George Floyd, the left has been pushing to not only defund the police, but to replace them with social workers in some cases. It's an incredibly stupid idea. Even seasoned police never really know what they're walking into when they get an emergency call. In the left-wing city of Boston, they recently sent a social worker on a call, and he ended up getting attacked by a crazy man with a sword. Luckily, there were police on scene as well. The suspect was shot and ultimately died. Mass Daily News reports, after George Floyd, they promised social workers would replace cops. One just got attacked with a sword in Boston. In the summer of 2020, after the death of Floyd and the protests that followed, the far left decided cops were the problem. Their theory? Armed officers escalate mental health crises. The social workers and clinicians instead, and people would stop getting hurt. On Saturday in Boston, one of those clinicians was attacked with a sword. The clinician was knocked to the ground inside an apartment building on Hemingway Street, steps from Northeastern University's campus. Again, this is in Boston we're talking about here. A police officer was stabbed in the arm. The man who attacked them, apparently in the grip of paranoid delusions, was shot by other officers and later died in the hospital. He had spent close to 45 minutes talking to the clinician through his locked door before he opened it. They called in a worker from Boston's BEST program, B-E-S-T, a co-responder model where master's-level mental health professionals ride alongside officers to de-escalate crisis calls. This isn't some half-baked experiment. The program has been running since 2011, 9 years before George Floyd, and handled 4,230 encounters in 2023 alone, with 12 clinicians working the streets 7 days a week. The clinician talked to the man through the door for the better part of an hour. Then the man opened the door and attacked, striking both a clinician and an officer with what the police commissioner, Michael Cox, described as, quote, some sort of sword, unquote. Officers fired a taser and their weapons. The man was rushed to a hospital and pronounced dead. Who could have predicted that such a thing? Besides, everyone. Even Democrats have begun to admit that the idea of defunding the police was a massive mistake. And remember, this is what Zoran Mamdani now wants to do in New York City, which has a much more serious crime problem than Boston, just by nature of its size. What could possibly go wrong? And that was from the Gateway Pundit by Mike LaChance, April 6th, just a few days back. And you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. You can hear us Thursday nights live at a frequency on shortwave of 4.840. Time is 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's a one-hour show weekly. And I'm the host. So, there are other venues. You can go to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, to see some of the other venues. In particular, Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com, has the program. at that time, 8 p.m., on their website, WWCI.com. Again, the time is Eastern. In this case, Eastern Daylight Savings Time, this time of year. And there are some other venues you can, again, see on the website, DivideKingdomRadio.com. The program repeats Saturday morning and a frequency of 7.490 if you listen by shortwave, or once again, WWCI.com. They have several transmitters, but if you go to their schedule on their website, you can see which transmitter to check out for the show. Okay, we wouldn't be a regular program if we didn't have a little bit about politics. What's the politics this week? Well, probably more than one thing, but here's an interesting one. From the Washington Times, Rahm Emanuel, that should be a name that rings a bell from the past. Rahm Emanuel tests 2028 run, vows to fight Trump's MAGA, but also to fight weak and woke liberals. This is by Sean McLaughlin, again, the Washington Times, Friday, April 3rd. They begin with just a little series of things to know. First of all, Rahm Emanuel is considering a run for president in 2028. Next, he criticizes the Democratic Party for being elitist and, quote, weak and woke, unquote. Third, Mr. Emanuel believes Democrats have lost focus on key issues like education and public safety. And the fourth point, he questions the party's stance on Title IX and trans athletes in women's sports. Now for the main article. Rahm Emanuel tells audiences that plenty of rivals have learned the hard way what happens when they get in his way. He said, quote, nobody walked into the ring with Rahm Emanuel and didn't walk out with a broken nose, he told WNUR during a recent stop in New Hampshire. I think I used to listen to that station as a kid. We used to just barely be able to get it. In the old days of analog TV, rabbit ear antennas. Some of you are old enough to remember that kind of thing. And we used to listen to wrestling on that Manchester, New Hampshire station, WMUR. Now, going on with the quote from Rahm Emanuel, he said, I know how to fight, but more importantly, I know how to win, unquote. That line is part of a two-track pitch Mr. Emanuel is test driving as he weighs a 2028 run. One track is aimed at ending what he describes as Trump-era chaos. The other at stopping what he casts as the cultural left drift. The scrappy 66-year-old is leaning on a long resume as a political brawler in Congress, the Obama White House, Chicago City Hall, and most recently, the U.S. Embassy in Japan. He is now directing much of his energy at his own party. From his perspective, Democrats have, quote, lost the plot, unquote. He said the party's brand is too elitist and, quote, weak and woke, unquote. He faults the party for embracing defund the police, branding law enforcement as racist, and wading into culture war fights in schools. He said on the Fifth Column podcast, quote, we are on the losing side of these cultural wars. You're worried about bathroom access and locker room access. Why don't you focus on classroom excellence? Unquote. This is Lou speaking. Can't argue with that. He certainly has a good point there. And going on with the article, he also has questioned why Democrats are at odds with Title IX. A law the party once championed. He said, why would you undercut the premise of Title IX with the ability of trans men playing in women's sports? To me, it's insane. Unquote. Looking ahead, he is urging Democrats to offer a vision centered on government ethics, raising the federal minimum wage, and reducing the cost of housing and health care. His travel schedule, Iowa, Mississippi, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, and South Carolina looks a lot like the early stages of a presidential campaign. It remains to be seen how much appetite the party faith will have for a throwback to the Obama-Clinton era, a period that has drawn mounting criticism from the insurgent left, which has also taken shots at his record as Chicago mayor. What is clear is that Mr. Emanuel could shake up the primary by squaring off against the more left-wing candidates, those he likely blames for the party's missteps, the same people who view its old-school approach as backward-looking. He has tossed the base some red meat. And I'm going to skip down a bit. He criticized Mr. Trump for his Iran, what he calls adventures. Let me see what else we have here. Alongside those critiques, Mr. Emanuel is pitching a ban on stock trading and prediction market bets by all federal employees, and a mandatory retirement age of 75 for members of Congress and Supreme Court justices. He says the United States Senate used to be where you aspire to serve. Today, it's where you go to retire. Well, this is Lou again. I can't argue with that. That makes sense. I think it's high time they had some kind of a mandatory retirement age, both for the Supreme Court and for the Congress. And maybe the presidency, too, the way we just saw Joe Biden in the last 4 years, or 5 years. All right, let's see what else we have in this article. He's pushing a national service plan, 6 months required for all young Americans, with an optional 2-year extension rewarded with help with a home down payment. He said, you take 2 years and do something for America, we're going to give you a down payment on the American dream, unquote. Well, he has some good ideas. I don't know if I would go so far as to vote for him, but he certainly, at least he has energy, which Joe Biden never had, and he seems to be wide awake. I'll give him credit for that, and he doesn't seem particularly woke, which is a good thing. And it concludes, he hasn't announced a run, but isn't ruling one out either. But he did say, I'm not doing it here, he said during his recent stop in New Hampshire. Well, we'll see. It's still early in the game. We're talking of 2.5 years away before the election, or close to that. So we shall see what develops with Mr. Emanuel and a great many other Democrats, not to mention the Republicans. Okay, we just got over the Easter holiday. I hope that you had a fine Easter or Passover, which was also last week. Now we have from Fox News, and that, by the way, I didn't mention it, was from the Washington Times on Friday, April 3rd, the article about Rahm Emanuel's possible quest for the presidency. So now we go to the Fox News. Fox News, April the 6th. King Charles sparks backlash from UK Christians by not delivering an Easter message this year. Okay, this is by Ashley Popper, just like Popper and Mama. Ashley Popper, Fox News. UK Christians are shocked by King Charles opting to not give an Easter message, according to experts. Buckingham Palace previously confirmed that Charles would not be giving an Easter message. The palace told GB News that an Easter message from the monarch is not an unusual statement, or is not an annual statement, like the Christmas message. It's expected that Charles' silence would upset some Christians, as he wished Islamic practicing people a, quote, blessed and happy Ramadan on social media in February. And according to Neil Sean, a royal commentator, the commentator told Fox News Digital, quote, this came as a shock to most UK Christians here in the United Kingdom. We expected a message from the monarch, unquote. And he added, it's not clear why he decided to not offer a message up, which is why the British people are upset. But more so when he made video contributions filmed inside royal palaces for, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, these are Muslim holidays, EID. I think that's I, but I'm not positive. And Ramadan. And that was what Sean noted. And it says some people in the UK are even accusing Charles of being a, quote, secret Muslim, unquote. Now, the royal family Instagram, however, did share a message in honor of Easter Sunday. An image of a cross with Happy Easter is written was posted to the royal family Instagram page. Well, this may be a lot of upset over nothing. But it's interesting that even the British are entirely satisfied with the royals. And I think that's been that way for a long time. There was criticism back when I was a kid. And that's a long time ago. Well, now, that again was Fox News. And the date, what was the date? April 6th. So now, we're going to switch over. We don't really talk too much about CNN here because usually they're rather biased in my estimation. Yeah, I used to listen to them all the time when I commuted to work for a number of years. But then I switched to Fox News because even though they may be a little biased, I think that they are more fair in their treatment of most news stories. And I'm a little more conservative than I used to be. So it seems that Fox thinks a little bit more like what I think. Well, here's something from the Western Journal. CNN analyst breaks down the numbers for Dems, reveals their own voters can't stand them. This is April 5th, Nicole Silverio. CNN senior data analyst Harry Enten said Thursday the congressional Democrats are underwater with their own voter base. Over 70% of American voters and 55% of Democrats believe their party's leaders do not have the right priorities. I got into a CNN SSRS poll cited by Enten. The party's approval rating stands at a historic low in comparison to past midterm election years. Enten remarked, "You might say, okay, well, at least Dems like Democrats, but that's not the case. Look at this. The majority of Democrats are independents or lean Democrat." I think by that he means the ones who are voting. That's a little contradictory. I assume the author of this means, or Mr. Enten, rather, means the majority of those who vote Democrat are independents who lean toward the Democrat side. But look at this. Again, these are his words. 55% say no. Congressional Democrats do not have the right priorities. And then you just see a minority. 45% of Democrats say that congressional Democrats have the right party. This, to me, just jumps out at the screen because it screams primary challenges all over the map. And it says that even if Democrats don't like Donald Trump, they don't like their own party either when it comes to Congress, unquote. Democrats' net approval rating with their voters stood at a minus 4 points as of Thursday, which dropped significantly from the plus 28 and plus 19-point net approval ratings they had in 2006 and 2018, respectively, Enten said. He pointed out that these historically low numbers will likely cause primary challenges across the map during the 2026 midterm elections. And he said, this is Democrats. Democrats own net approval of their own congressional leaders. He went on, even Democrats don't like their own leaders when it comes to Congress. And overall, of course, the numbers are just absolutely awful. So Democrat on Democrat crime, so to speak, absolutely. This, to me, screams again, challenges across the map. And it screams to me, hey, when it comes to those next leadership elections, maybe something might be, unquote. I guess he means challenges. And, of course, the Democrats really don't have a front runner. Now, granted, it's 2 years till the election, really 2.5 years, so there's plenty of time for someone to emerge. And in the past, that's been true in both parties. I don't think John F. Kennedy was looked upon as a big challenger 2.5 years before he won the election. And no doubt there are plenty of others who were in the same boat. But the old guard like Chuck Schumer, I don't think they're going to make out too well. In fact, this article says Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer received major scrutiny from his party after he failed to persuade 8 Democratic senators to vote against reopening the government in November. Schumer's chances of remaining the leader of his caucus have dropped from 65% on December 1st to just 50% currently, Enten said. And he, Enten remarked, we've seen a number of Senate candidates, Democrats across the map, saying, we don't want any part of Chuck Schumer to be the next leader. Democrats' approval ratings have remained at record lows, with one survey by Quinnipiac University finding that 18% of voters approved of congressional Democrats' job performance. 18%, that's not too good. That's 1 out of 5. All right, so that was from the Western Journal. A CNN analyst breaks down the numbers for Dents. And that was dated April 5th. Again, if you want to listen to the program, you can hear it Thursday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, either by going to WWCR.com on the Internet, or if you have a shortwave radio, you can go to a frequency of 4.840 megahertz. That's Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can hear the repeat Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. on 7.490 shortwave, or once again, WWCR.com. Well, what else is happening in the world? Besides Iran, as I say, I could cover Iran, but by the time you hear this, it's going to be 2 days. I'm recording this Tuesday afternoon, as I usually have to. And who knows? President Trump has said they're going to strike Iran big time tonight if there's no deal. We'll see what happens. You'll know by the time you hear this program, you'll know where things are pointed. I will say this. There's been a lot of criticism, but we don't really know just what the president and his team know about Iran. Were they on the verge of getting a nuclear weapon? A lot of people say, oh, Iran is no threat. Well, we've seen how all these missiles are going to other countries in the Near East, or Middle East, as they call it today. So it might well be that the president knows that in due time, Iran's going to have missiles that will go to North America and threaten the USA. And if that's the case, I think the president was right to strike while there was a chance before they got a nuclear weapon and could put that on one of those missiles. Now, people may say, well, that's far-fetched. I don't know. I don't claim to know because I don't know the inside out of what we know about Iran. That is to say, what the higher-ups know about Iran and the government. So we will see. But I've tried to pick up some things today that are not going to be dated, not as much dated anyway. I did my taxes over the last 2 days. I'm afraid I'm rather slow and procrastinating at doing taxes, mainly because I've had to pay taxes. I've had to pay a little extra, sometimes a lot extra, the last 10 or more years. I haven't had a refund in a long time. But with Elizabeth's death and a consequently reduction in my income and some changes in the government rules, I will get a refund this year from the state of Maryland and from the federal government, a much bigger one from the federal government. Maryland has a very complicated way of figuring taxes. It took me a long time to get used to it. Pennsylvania, by contrast, is much simpler. I think I'm told, too, that Pennsylvania does not tax pensions, at least teacher pensions. Maryland does. They tax every little bit they can get their hands on. Our governor, Wes Moore, I think never saw a tax he didn't like. And I'm not picking on Wes, just as the only person. I think, you know, Maryland is a Democrat state, for better or worse. The big cities rule, as I've said before. Baltimore and the suburbs of Washington, D.C., are the high population centers of the state, and they pretty much control who gets into the state legislature. So, for better or worse, I got my taxes done. I'll get a little bit of money back. Not a lot, but a little at least. So, better than nothing. So that reads into the next article from Fox News. Blue states are changing the tax rules on the wealthy, and it's going to cost all of us. And I talked about this maybe a couple times ago, might have even been a couple of programs ago, and last week maybe, I'm not quite sure. They all kind of blend together. And it says, is the subheadline, blue states have every right to set their own tax policy, but they don't get to suspend the law of economics along with it. This is by Ted Jenkins of Fox News. And it it appeared online on April the 6th, 2026. Every politician eventually runs out of other people's money to spend. Blue state governors and legislators are just running out faster than the rest. Right now, there is a coordinated wave of new tax proposals sweeping California, New York, Washington State, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Connecticut. The common thread? They all believe the solution to self-inflicted budget crises is to reach deeper into the pockets of their most productive residents. And if those residents decide to leave, they want to charge them an exit tax on the way out. What? Is this America? Let that sink in. An exit tax, as in, if we know you're leaving because of our lousy tax structure, and we want the door to hit you on the way out. Now, the subtitle here, the proposals on the table right now. And I know I talked about this one, if not last week, then a week, maybe 2 weeks ago. California's Billionaire Tax Act is the crown jewel of this movement. The ballot measure would impose a one-time 5% tax on the total net worth of anyone worth more than $1 billion residing in the state. Not their income. That's not what the tax is on. It's on their net worth. In other words, you subtract everything they own, subtract off their debts, and see what you got. Think about what that means for a founder whose entire net worth is locked up in a private company that employs thousands of people. And think about how many millionaires they made themselves building that company. You would have $2 million in liquid assets and a $100 billion paper valuation. And California would hand you a $5 billion tax bill. And list, you didn't hear me right. That's $5 billion with a B. That's not a tax policy. That's an asset seizure, dressed up as fairness. Washington State, which has never had an income tax in its history, just passed a 9.9% tax on incomes over $1 million. The moment that bill cleared the legislature, Starbucks founder Howard Schultz announced he was moving to Florida. Shocker. Starbucks owner. Now, take that back. Starbucks' own headquarters announced it's moving to Tennessee. Another shocker. When the founder and the company both leave at the same time, that's not a coincidence. That's the message we hear in a resounding fashion from high-tax, high-spend states. Michigan wants to amend its state constitution to impose a 9.25% top rate on incomes over $500,000. For residents of Detroit, the combined state and local rate would approach nearly 12%. While across the border in Ohio, the flat income tax rate is 2.75%. In Indiana, it's only 2.95%. You don't need to be a certified financial planner to do that math. You just need a moving truck. And the next section is entitled, "This is a story about bad leadership decisions." I want to be clear about something. Again, this is the author speaking, Ted Jenkins. And let's see, do I have a description of Mr. Jenkins? He's president of Exit Stage Left Advisors and host of the Red, White, and Green show. So, Mr. Jenkins says, "I want to be clear about something. I'm not here to defend billionaires. I'm here to defend economic reality. The top 1% of California taxpayers currently supplies nearly half of all income tax collections in the state. Half. That's not a sustainable revenue model. That's a house of cards. And the moment those top earners, who are not just the billionaires, but when the 500,000 a year business owners, the startup investors, the executive, start relocating, the math collapses for everyone else who stays behind. This has already started. Six of California's 214 billionaires left before the proposed January 1st, 2026 residency cutoff. Those six people alone took $27 billion in potential tax revenue with them. Google co-founder Larry Page dropped $170 million on a Miami estate and moved his family office out of California. David Sachs, who lived 30 years in the state, packed up for Texas and called the proposed tax what it really is, an asset seizure. Here's what I've learned in over 30 years as a financial advisor." And again, this is Ted Jenkins speaking. "Here's what I've learned in over 30 years as a financial advisor. Wealthy people don't wait for the bill to arrive. They plan years in advance. The exits happening today were decided in law offices and financial planning meetings 18 months ago. The exits that haven't happened yet are being decided right now. Why this should matter to you even when you're not a billionaire? Here's where this stops being an abstract policy debate and starts affecting your daily life. When high earners leave a state, the remaining tax base must pick up the tab. Services get cut. Or taxes get raised on the next run of earners, which are the people making $150,000, then $100,000, then lower. California, New York, and Michigan didn't build world-class universities, hospitals, and infrastructures by accident. They built them on the backs of a thriving private economy. Dismantle the engine, and eventually the whole train stops. There's also a broader economic signal being sent. When Washington State is no longer a zero income tax state, when California makes it financially dangerous to be a successful founder, and when Michigan punishes its highest earners at nearly 12%, nearly 12 cents on the dollar, innovation, capital, and job creation go somewhere else. And somewhere else right now is Florida, Texas, Tennessee, and Nevada. If you live in one of these states and you have built meaningful wealth, including a business, a portfolio, a real estate holding, or a qualified retirement account, this is not a news story to skim and forget. This is a planning conversation to have with your financial advisor and your estate planning attorney. Several of these proposals include exit taxes on residents who leave within 5 years of implementation. The window to plan proactively is now, not after the ballot measure passes, not after the bill is signed, now. Wealthy people are not a fixed resource. They are mobile, they are organized, and they have options. And right now, those options are looking at a lot like the Sunshine State in instead of the Golden State. Now, this is Lou speaking. I frankly don't know if this is constitutional. It has these essentially asset seizures. That would seem to me to violate one of the amendments to the Constitution about, you know, depriving people of life, liberty, and property without due process. In fact, that may be in the main Constitution. But I should have looked that up to inform you. But you can check out the Constitution and see what it says. But that doesn't mean they won't try and do it, of course. I think the California thing is going to go on the ballot this fall. So what the people decide. This, again, was from Fox News by Ted Jenkins. There's no S on the end of his name, by the way, Ted Jenkins. And it was entitled, Blue States Are Changing the Tax Rules on the Wealthy, and It's Going to Cost All of Us. And it was April the 6th. All right, I'm going to give you a few things of information from my friend up in Massachusetts who has sent me a whole packet of stuff. If only we had 4 or 5 hours, I could give you all of them. I'm afraid my voice wouldn't hold out that long. Here's one by Victor Davis Hanson. You may have seen him on Fox as a commentator. He has a lot of distinct resume points, which I don't have in front of me right now, but he has at least one brand new book out. This little article is entitled Importing Ingrates. It appeared in the New York Post on March 23rd. And again, it's by Victor Davis Hanson. I'll just read you a portion of it. Silicon Valley was energized by illegal immigrants from all over the world who founded eBay, Google, NVIDIA, SpaceX, Stripe, Tesla, and a host of other companies. The Ilya Kazan film, America, America, based on the Herculean struggle of the director's uncle to immigrate to the U.S., summed up Americans' traditional view of immigrants. They'd risked everything for the chance to reach America. And once there, became hyper-patriotic in gratitude for the magnanimity of their new hosts. I grew up in rural California, surrounded by hardworking immigrant farm families from Armenia, India, Japan, and Mexico. Their work ethic, love of America, and productive farms were models for U.S. non-immigrants. My Swedish grandfather, disabled by poison gas while fighting in World War I, loved all things Swedish, but not nearly as much as America. Or Hansen's fought in the front lines of World War I and II. One was disabled, another killed. All felt blessed their parents and grandparents had gotten to America. But something has gone terribly wrong with immigration. While America's at war, crowds of immigrants, visitors, and foreign students scream anti-American slogans as they cheer our enemies. On campuses, thousands of Middle Eastern international students have staged often violent demonstrations. They're not shy about cheering on the Hamas slaughter of Israeli civilians. They haven't just damned Israel, but also often harassed Jewish Americans. Mayor Mandani, a naturalized citizen from Uganda, whose parents became public figures and multimillionaires in America, has had little good to say about his adopted country. His public wife, Rama Duwaji, whose parents were naturalized Syrian citizens, illustrated a book rife with anti-Semitism. After October 7th, she, quote-unquote, liked social media posts praising the terrorist Hamas killers, sworn enemies of her own country. Stranger still is the attitude of illegal aliens when they finally face deportation. Ilma Abrego Garcia became an icon to the left when he faced deportation. He clearly ignored his deportation orders and was an alleged gang member, an often violent spousal abuser, and a human trafficker. He presciently expected hundreds of thousands of dollars in free legal help, ensuring he could stay in the country for which he showed utter contempt. Well, it goes on with some other examples here. Talks about driver's licenses issued to both illegal aliens and illegal residents, including those who don't understand English and are utterly unqualified to drive. Any surprise that we have recently witnessed horrific crashes? And I'll just interject. You no doubt have heard about truck drivers who can't even read English and therefore can't read the road signs, whether it be their speed limits or directions, driving these big rigs and other smaller trucks as well. Well, if you want to read the whole article, it's quite good, but time doesn't permit us to read it all. Again, this is by Victor Davis Hansen, appeared in the New York Post, Monday, March 23rd. Entitled Importing Ingrates. Another article that was sent to me by my faithful friend up in Massachusetts was by Michael Goodwin of the New York Post, Sunday, March 29th. It says, one of the most infuriating signs of our troubled era is that you don't have to dig far into the political barrel to find the anti-Semites. Although they have made deeper and broader inroads among Democrats, especially in the far left, disheartening numbers of Republicans, independents, and erstwhile conservatives are also guilty of embracing the ancient hatred. A common sign among the haters these days is the crackpot claim that Jews, Israeli and American, hoodwinked President Trump into joining Israel's war against Iran. According to this theory, Trump and his White House were like so many innocent lambs being led to the slaughter. During his decade in politics, Trump has been vilified and insulted with every slur imaginable, including being called a rapist, a racist, a fraud, and a Russian agent. Surely this is the first time he stands accused of being a gullible victim of other chicanery. What the president should have done, his detractors insist, was have America's mind its own damn business. Most never cared for the His America First idea, but now they condemn him for, as they see it, violating his vow. Had he done what they wanted, the argument goes, Trump would have realized we have no reason to be concerned about Iran's decades-long quest for regional domination. And it goes on about how some of these guys are idiots. A new generation of know-it-all idiots insist America would be fine if we just took care of our own business and let everyone else take care of theirs, especially when it comes to the Israelis. It's not a coincidence that many of the anti-Israel types were foolishly claiming last year that the Jewish state was guilty of committing genocide in Gaza and it was using starvation as a weapon. And it goes on and on. Well, people that take that attitude don't seem to think that, you know, America should be into anything. I guess we shouldn't have entered World War One or Two. World War One, there might be some debate about that. World War Two, you have to remind them, we were bombed first. Of course, the revisionists say, oh, Roosevelt knew all about it. He knew exactly when they were going to bomb Pearl Harbor. Well, Roosevelt wanted, if anything, to get into the war against Hitler. He certainly didn't want a war on the Pacific to drain away all the resources. So that's just damn foolishness. You'll pardon my expression. Anyway, good article, New York Post, March 29th, by Michael Goodwin. And I don't seem to have a title for that. I think the title might have got chopped off, or else it was in a separate paper I didn't pick up. Then there's one on Chuck Schumer, good old Chuck Schumer. He looks like he's ready to bite the dust. This is by Howie Codd, and his articles are always really good and humorous. I just don't have the time to read it all. But it's entitled, Schumer's Losing It Like Dementia Joe Biden. And do we have a date on this? I don't think we do, but I'm sure it's quite recent. Is Chuck Schumer headed down the same dark treadmill to senility pioneered by Dementia Joe Biden before him? I'm no gerontologist, but I do play one on the radio. As part of my daily show, Prep, I, quote, study aging, unquote, to use the dictionary definition of the word. I search for sound bites to both amuse my audience and to prove the moral depravity an intellectual bankruptcy of the Democrat Party. Hey, somebody's got to do it, and it's not going to be regime-controlled media. On the eve of his 76th birthday, Silver Spoon Schumer finds himself under increasing pressure, and not just with his sputtering shutdowns of the nation's airports in order to keep millions of bloodthirsty, welfare-dependent, third-world illegal aliens in the U.S. and voting Democrat. Schumer is a goner in 2028. Even if he seeks re-election, he'll be crushed in the primary by either AOC or the Ugandan-born mayor of New York City, Zoran Mamdani. Well, that's a good article. Again, time doesn't permit us to read it all, but you can find it by going to the New York Post. Or is it the Boston Herald? Well, I'm not sure. Just type in a search for Howie Carr, C-A-R-R, columnist, and I'll bet you can find it in many venues. Well, getting back to some other things here, let's see what else we have. Oh, here's one about Kanye West. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Rapper and a source of all kinds of uproar. In fact, that's what's happening in the United Kingdom. This article from the Gateway Pundit is entitled UK in Turmoil over Kanye West headlining music festival. Brands are withdrawing sponsorships and Home Office wants to ban him. This is by Paul Saran, April 6th, again, the Gateway Pundit. And Paul Saran, it mentions, is a Brazilian writer and musician. And you can follow him on X, or Truth Social. Brits are losing it over Ye. That, of course, is Kanye West's nickname, Y-E. That multi-millionaire recording artist, Kanye West, is controversial. There's no disputing it. Whether he is parading his wife completely in the nude in public events, or else making shocking statements only to retract them with a mountain of apologies, he is always in the headlines, and seldom for a good reason. So, the prospect of headlining July's wireless festival in the UK would be a nice opportunity for the entertainer to get back at what he was made famous for, his music. Except for the fact that the news of his participation has put the UK in turmoil. So much so that the failing British government finds itself under growing pressure to ban U.S. rapper Kanye West from entering the country. Reuters reported, quote, West, now known as Ye, has been criticized in the past for anti-Semitic remarks and celebration of Nazism, which have led on several occasions to his social media accounts, including on X, being banned. The decision to book Ye prompted several companies to pull their sponsorship of the festival, while the main opposition Conservative Party wrote to Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood, urging her to ban him from coming to Britain, unquote. The failing Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, who approved late-term abortions up to birth, and who voted for the failed bill for assisted suicide, was described as deeply concerning in pertaining to the decision to book Ye for the London Festival. And today it has emerged that Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood is considering, quote, blocking Kanye West from entering Britain over his history of anti-Semitism, unquote. And the author says it's never too much to remind our readers that the UK has received and honored Ukrainian Azov fighters who are real-life, present-day Nazis. So talk about double standards. The Telegraph reported, quote, Jewish organizations and MPs have urged the government to ban the musician from entering the United Kingdom. Ministers can block the entry of any foreign national if their presence is considered not, quote, conducive to the public good, unquote. Three companies, Pepsi, Rockstar Energy, and I guess it's pronounced Diageo, D-I-A-G-E-O, have withdrawn their sponsorship of the festival. The Home Office would not comment on whether West had already applied for the electronic travel authorization, but Ms. Mahmood would have the ability to block any application. So, another little controversy in the United Kingdom across the pond. Well, we have about 8 minutes left. What else do we have here? National Public Radio. This is from the New York Post. NPR didn't quote a single member of Michigan synagogue after attack, but interviewed terrorist pals in Lebanon. By Chris Nessie, April 5th. NPR didn't manage to quote a single member of the Michigan synagogue that was attacked last month by a crazed Hezbollah supporting terrorist. But it did manage to track down his pals 6,000 miles away in Lebanon, a new report reveals. Even NPR's public editor is criticizing the lefty broadcaster for the stunning oversight. Instead of focusing on the victims in the heinous attack, a March 14th All Things Considered segment sent an NPR reporter to the Lebanon hometown of Ayman Ghazali, 41, who just days earlier had rammed his truck into a Jewish preschool at Temple Israel in West Bloomfield Township. NPR public editor Kelly McBride admitted the station fell short in its one-sided coverage of the Hezbollah-inspired Michigan synagogue attack last month. The FBI later confirmed Ghazali, who killed himself after engaging in a firefight with a security guard, was inspired by the Iran-backed terrorist group. NPR headlined its article, "In a small Lebanese town, grief and fear followed the Michigan synagogue attack." That resulted in listeners quickly calling out the publicly funded outlet for attempting to paint the terrorist and his family in a sympathetic light. One listener, Batya Angar Sargon, wrote sarcastically in a Substack post about the coverage that, quote, "NPR found the real victim of an attack on 140 Jewish American babies. And the real victim is the Hezbollah-infested town in Lebanon that raised a family of terrorists," unquote. Israeli Defense Forces revealed after the attack that Ghazali's brother was a Hezbollah commander. Another audience member, Richard Wilkins, took NPR to task for its one-sided coverage that downplayed the brother's known association with the terrorist group. And he wrote NPR's public editor, Kelly McBride, quote, "NPR's reaction? Sympathize understanding for the subsequent grief and fear in his former hometown. Concealment of then public knowledge that those two brothers were Hezbollah terrorists in a town full of Hezbollah sympathizers," unquote. McBride made her response defending NPR's reasoning for its reporting 6,000 miles away in Lebanon. And she wrote, quote, "The journalistic purpose of the story was to explore the connection between the terror attack on the Michigan synagogue and the family that was killed on the other side of the world. Simply documenting that relationship and humanizing the family does not imply that Ghazali's attempt to kill more than 100 children was justified," unquote. Well, this is loose speaking. It certainly seems to me that it's minimizing the victims and, like so many things today, praising or at least sympathizing with the perpetrators. However, she admitted, and I would have to say probably reluctantly, that the network fell short in telling the full story. Let's see if there's anything else worth reading here. Let's see. I don't see too much. If you want to read the whole article, you can go through the New York Post. This is by Chris Nessie, NESI, April 5th, 2026. Well, our time is running away from us. We had an article that I'll read probably next week. String of inmate deaths linked to paper laced with toxic drug, rocks infamous Chicago jail. And then one of the persons said, how do you keep this, meaning the drugs, out of schools if it's impregnated in paper? Well, schools use a lot of paper. And there are sickos out there that would want to try to smuggle it into schools just to hurt people. That's the world we live in today, because we always did, but it seems a little worse these days. Well, once again, thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear the program, you can hear it by shortwave if you have a shortwave radio. 4.840 Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturday mornings, 7.490 at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. And you can also hear it on WWCR.com and some other venues. You can hear it on KSTARTalkRadio.com. That has a lot of good programs, including some reruns of old Dr. Stan Monteith programs. Those were always excellent. We like to listen to those, and we became good friends with Dr. Stan before his death, Elizabeth and I. So, those are some of the ways that you can listen to the program. You can also go to our website, to the archives, and you can listen directly anytime to past programs on the archives. Just go to DividedKingdomRadio.com, look for the program archives, and you can pick the day you want. So, I hear the music coming on. There are some other articles we didn't get to today. Let's see. We had one about possible sleeper cells in the U.S. that Iran might try to activate. But so far, that hasn't been the case. We shall see what the future brings. We've got astronauts who will be returning to Earth after going around the moon. Many, many interesting things. So we'll try to cover some of those next week. Tune in again next week. Thank you for listening. This is Lou Caraboli for the Divided Kingdom. Good night.